Alex Loizu, you are the CEO of Truva, one of the three co-founders of the business that I understand you set up in 2015. Many of those years since then, you've been CTO slash CPO, Chief Product Officer, but at the helm for the last year and a half or so. Welcome.
Hi, Rupert. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, Alex, you and I have known each other for a shortish while, but I've known of you guys for a long time. You've won hundreds of awards. And only last year, I think in the Sunday Times TechTrack 100, you ranked 34 in terms of your super growth from an early spot. But you've got many other accolades, including the Retail Week Emerging Retail of the Year a couple of years ago. And too many to mention, perhaps, here. You've raised about $35 million. From a number of very well-known venture capital firms, Index, Local Globe, Business Growth Fund, and of course, Octopus. But most importantly, you work with and support over 1,000 bricks and mortar independent boutique retailers across 13 countries, providing them a platform to sell online. So I wanted to first ask you in this mini podcast to tell us a little bit more about your experiences. You've experienced thriving through the pandemic or surviving the pandemic. We'll learn in a moment. But first of all, tell us a little bit about Truva in your own words.
Yeah, thanks so much for that introduction. I think from our perspective, it's quite clear what we're trying to solve is we are trying to find a smart way to curate the world's inventory and to create an experience online that is much more inspiration-led rather than the typical e-commerce experience we go through as people right now, where we already know what we want. And then we search for it, we find it, and buy it. And the way that we have approached this was by figuring out that there's thousands of master curators that exist in the offline world that have a beautiful offline presence, where you walk into one of these shops and you get lost in the style and the aesthetic. You don't go in there because you already know what you want to buy. You go in there because you want to experience something, you want to get inspired. And so bringing all of these guys together in one platform and creating an ecosystem where these guys can take advantage of economies of scale and technology, but also people around the world are actually do have access to that talent and the products that they have. That unlocks a curated experience and an experience in retail that is very much driven by inspiration. And so from that perspective, throughout the last year, with lockdowns coming through and with major limitations for every single one of us, from not being able to walk in the street anymore, not being able to go to restaurants, to pubs, to shops, and get inspired. That's just elevated even further what we've been doing by keeping these doors open, even if in the digital space rather than in the offline space.
I definitely miss the opportunity of being inspired through through going to the pub, and I think that's probably for most of us one of the things we're most looking forward to social engagement with friends and peers, and it can't be too long. But over the last 12 months or so of the pandemic, as we talk here, early Feb 2021, you have been a lifeline to many of these independent businesses. These are independent business owners who've bought stock and they've got it in a shop and they've needed to sell it to existing or new customers. Just give us a sense, Alex, of how the performance of Truva has been for you and for these curators. And I'd love to know a bit more about which categories in particular have performed well.
Yeah, I think so. Well, when you think about these, when you look at these types of independent curators, the majority of their sales still happens in the offline world or used to still happen in the offline world. So we're talking about 80 to 90% of their revenues being offline versus like something like 10%, 15% online. And that's just a function of when you are an independent retailer and you are a curator in the offline space, you're paying your rent and you are showcasing your selection in the offline world. But at the same time, you're on your own. And the thing about online is that economies of scale are incredibly important. One, in order to be able to unlock good customer experiences, but also secondly, in order to be able to stay in the front of mind of customers, right? No one wants to buy from a small shop in Berlin, for example, and pay 20 euros in order to get that parcel delivered to them. On your own, you don't have the numbers, you don't have the scale to be able to negotiate better prices, to be able to build technology that makes more sense and that can bring cost savings in all of your operations, right? So from that perspective, over the past year, what we've seen is just a massive rise in engagement from our curators because effectively the only online channel that they could still transact through was Truma. At the same time, we're taking learnings from across our entire network and then diffusing that through every single one of our partners, right? So for example, we noticed and realized what was happening in Italy way before the news started breaking in the UK around we're going into lockdown. And if you remember, a year ago, lockdowns were a thing of science fiction. Like no one believed and no one could really visualize what does that actually mean. So when we saw that the Italian shops were shutting down, they were going into lockdown, we were very proactive in figuring out our operational model, advising and helping all of the curators that we have on our platform to stay open and stay transactional during that time. And I think, you know, there's two ways of looking at it. One is, well, Truva is giving a lifeline to those curators. But from my perspective, actually, what is much more important for me is that we preserve choice for the customer. You still had a choice to go and buy from a beautiful selection of products from a small shop in Shoreditch, rather than just the big guys that are online only and were the only place that you could buy things from. And I think choice is such an important piece to the puzzle, because that's why we work with independence, and independent thought is something that we really care about.
And of course, Truva is a, I assume, the play on word on the French word to find. You've always been purposeful about wanting to be a destination for people to enjoy the experience, either as a break from work or perhaps with a glass of wine in the evening, to go searching and to enjoy the equivalent of walking down a pretty high street on holiday or perhaps the weekend. And so I think, as you say, you've been able to offer that experience to people who've not clearly been able to get out. But tell me, which categories have performed particularly well?
So, you know, the first, first of all, when you think about the overall category mix at Truva, what we care about is much more on style and aesthetic rather than category fill rate. So okay. The merchandising piece for us is something that we do look at from a commercial aspect, but at the same time, what we are trying to solve is the horizontal. Like, how do you bring styles and aesthetic up into the online world where you have a cross-category mix rather than a specialization in a specific category? That being said, a big percentage of our products are from the home decor space, where there's a big gap online generally. It's a very long tail with, especially in the premium lifestyle space, very long tail, smaller brands, but with a beautiful selection of products. So other than that, we do have fashion accessories, kits, and so on and so forth. What we saw during the first lockdown was people really going into surrounding themselves with beautiful pieces, right? Like you're spending so much more time at home. You wake up in the morning and you know that you're going to be working from the same space that you live in. And so people put a lot more kind of value on arranging that space and putting things around them that they really do identify themselves with and tell a story to a certain degree. So we saw a lot of that. We saw a lot of comfort wear going upwards, like people were really interested in that. We saw a lot of people buying gifts for other people because you can't go there anymore, but can you send something to your friend or to your family
Absolutely.
member and so on and so forth. So I guess it's a mix of like specific categories that allow you to, well, help you get a better feeling about being at your home and not being out that much. And then on the other hand, behavioral parts around wanting to still connect with people out there and sending a gift to a friend is one way of connecting, you know?
And I imagine the likes of Bloom and Wild and Freddie's Flowers, etc., have obviously done phenomenally well from that power of gifting
Yeah.
and wanting people wanting to be kind to one another. Just going back to your earlier point about what you want the business to be and the aesthetic, the experience, and to increase the look and feel and the aesthetic perhaps of your home or office or environment. What other companies out there? What other digital companies out there do you respect that are doing similar great things in their field, be it fashion or travel even? Where do you keep an eye on that perhaps you hold in high regard?
Yeah, I think when you look at what we're trying to do at Truva, right, we are basically trying to coin the profession of the modern curator, the person that has a distinctive aesthetic and style and is willing to put in capital to buy in products from brands that identify with that aesthetic and style. And so one company that I look up to and I admire is Etsy because it has done exactly that for the makers and the crafts. Right? So when you think about the 21st century definition of a craftsperson or a maker, right? Etsy coined that. Etsy coined that profession and managed to elevate all those grassroots, all those individuals, all those independents to a point where they could preserve their independence by making it a profession. And I believe a similar kind of play can happen in the world of curation as well. So what does the professional curator of the 21st century look like? And what is the ecosystem you need to build around these people in order for them to be able to make this their profession and really thrive by selecting products for other people and reflecting that style and aesthetic? Now, on the other hand, you know, there's other marketplaces such as Farfetch, for example, that have managed to drive huge amount of growth to bricks and mortar shops, in that case, luxury fashion boutiques, and build an entire ecosystem around this luxury fashion space with bricks and mortar being a key part of that. So that again, like in terms of the business model and the execution, something that I admire being able to build that out. And then third but not least, I admire the companies that have understood, and maybe we're all wrong, and other people are right, but I believe that retail in the future transcends the online and offline spaces. And I believe that even though the high street is being transformed quite radically and has been transformed quite radically over the past 20 years, that doesn't mean that retail or shopping or buying will only exist online. I think it will exist online and it will exist offline as well because there are experiences that still matter. And so when you look at the likes of Nike, at the likes of Apple, they are investing, have invested, and continuing to invest in the offline experience that they create for their customers because they understand that retail is experience-led in the
Absolutely,
offline world, and the
absolutely.
offline world lends itself very well in creating that loyalty. So those are the kinds of companies, you know, where retail has been my life. I'm an engineer. I've come from the software engineering world. I wasn't in retail before, but it has become my life for the past few years. And I just think it's an exciting space to be in, and these are the types of exciting companies that I keep an eye on.
Yeah, great. I thought you may have said a couple of those, and I imagine Burberry and perhaps Matches Fashion as well. I also interested to get your opinion on businesses like Appear Here, who are helping take curators onto the high street where there are empty retail fronts.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, at the end of the day, when there are big transformations, entrepreneurs tend to find what are the different flows or gaps that can be utilized to extract more value or create more value for people, right? And what Appier here is doing, for example, with Save the High Street initiative as well that they launched, is really around taking those vacant spaces and figuring out how we can reinvigorate them. So yeah, like any for me, any initiative, company or entrepreneur who's looking at the retail space and is looking at, okay, of course there's opportunities in the online space, but retail is about online or offline. Retail is about an experience, and that experience doesn't get bottled up in one place or
Absolutely.
Another. That is my approach. The likes of Boohoo think in a very different way, right? But I don't think in that way. I think that it is across. And then that means that, you know, a lot of direct-to-consumer brands as well, like Allbirds and so on and so forth, are trying to go and have been going into the offline space as well. There is a reason for that. So anyone who looks at that and is like, okay, great opportunity, let's build a proper experience around both spaces, is something that like I keep an eye on because I'm really interested.
It seems imperative that experience is invested in the real world as much as online. Now, I didn't know whether to take this conversation this direction, but I guess it's, first of all, probably a little bit boring, but fundamental and vital to your business. But February the 11th, we're talking, Alex, today, and it's only a month or so since we finally left Europe and we finally Brexited. What has the impact been on your business if you currently sell in over 13 countries? And has it been bumpy?
Yeah, I think, you know, I would break it down into two big buckets, right? Bucket number one, you know, when you're going through Christmas, lockdowns, and then you still have pretty much zero visibility over what exactly does this mean, Brexit, for us, right? That is very stressful and very, very hard to just respond to, you know? And so what advice should we have been giving, or how do we prepare every single curator on our platform, the ones in the UK and the ones outside of the UK, to make sure that they can go through this Brexit with a last minute Brexit deal that then is 4,000 pages long, and we need to figure out what is actually written in that. So we did our best. We kept 97% of the orders that we shipped up to January went out in time, even though there were massive port closures. Our operations held up beautifully, and that is just a testament to my team and their ability to execute even in times of a lot of uncertainty. We've seen obviously that there are issues around, there is less demand for cross-border, and I think consumer sentiment, buying from UK shops, right, or UK shops buying from UK customers buying from European shops, we've seen that there is an impact there, right? We've seen that even post-deal, like, people are just scared, because there's so many stories out there around people getting charged like 200, 300 plus euros for import of something that may have cost 150, right? So, but we're seeing this slowly bounce back. Now, the big question is, what new things or what unknown unknowns exist now that we don't know about yet that will hit us in 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, right? Like, further down the supply chain, what kind of issues is this going to cause? I've heard stories from lorry drivers not being able to drive from Turkey all the way to the UK because they didn't have the right credentials, and companies having to kind of figure out ways to change lorry drivers midway in order to be able to come into the UK. Like, there's lots of those kinds of things as well. So we'll see what's going to happen. But at the end of the day, the approach I'm taking is, if we weren't here, I don't believe that any one of our curators would be able to do cross-border at this point in time. So us being here means that we are keeping these guys open and operational for cross-border transactions. When bigger players have decided not to ship outside of the UK anymore.
Yeah.
And that for me is a big win. That for me is a very big win. And so we're going to build up on that foundation and use that as a as an advantage for the independent world and for independent curators across Europe.
It's fascinating, Alex, and I hope those listening are enjoying it too. I've got two more questions, and they talk about one question which I think you've dodged so far, so I'm going to ask you one more time. And that is, has the business performed well through the last 12 months of the lockdown? And has it perhaps been accelerated? And the second question is, my final question, is what does your growth plan look like now as you look ahead? Is it deeper into markets or is it wider into new markets or territories?
Yeah, sure. I think so. In terms of the business performance, you know, there were, for the type of business we are, we work with bricks and mortar. So there was a big risk that we wouldn't have been able to perform as well. Because when bricks and mortars go into lockdowns, can you even still keep shipping stuff? Now, we managed to respond very quickly. We kept most of our curators open and operational. Engagement from our curator base grew significantly. And consumer demand, you know, across e-commerce has been going through the roof. And obviously companies like ours do benefit a lot from that as well. So it wasn't an easy 12 months generally, because there was a lot of uncertainty and so on and so forth. But just looking at the numbers, it was a hugely successful one for us. So that's definitely the case. And I think we took the right actions at the right point in time to build a very strong foundation for us to have the opportunity to accelerate further from here onwards on a healthy foundation. And that is the important piece, on healthy foundation, not a foundation built on hollow victories, right? So that's one part. The other part is, yeah, I mean, in terms of our plans from here onwards, we have a much bigger international footprint than we ever had before. We're going to continue investing in that. But at the end of the day, you know, like the game continues. And what we are trying to effectively do is utilize the insights that we have across consumer and supply and figure out how we can use that in order to accelerate our supply and create better value for our customers as well. So that is the flywheel that we're constantly investing in, and international is a piece of that. But that is the focus. Can we create more value for our curators? Can we create more value for our customers?
Alex, I can't help but think that you did a brilliant job at answering that question, but with so much humility and panache. At one moment, I thought you weren't going to answer it, and I thought we might be having a Boris Johnson moment. But
No. I'll always answer the question.
But as ever, you're very, very humble and great integrity, because, as you say, there are significant challenges ahead. There's a huge amount of unknowns for you, for your customers, and for your curators. But we look forward to watching your business expand and grow. And for anyone who hasn't checked out the Truva site, do. It's fun and refreshing in that they don't, as I experienced first time, usher you to sign up the minute you land on the page, which makes you one of the one percenters. Alex Loizu, CEO of Truva, thank you very much.
Thank you.